We're ready to proceed on our last case, the combined cases, Dallas Central Appraisal District versus Seven Investment and Dallas Central Appraisal District versus Las Colinas Corporation et al.
Thank you. First and foremost, Your Honors, this is a statutory construction case involving the Texas Property Tax Code. Centers around the issue of attorney's fees, Section 42.29, which states a taxpayer who prevails to appeal in the court under Section 42.25 or Section 42.26 of this code may be awarded reasonable attorney's fees not to exceed the greater of $5,000 or 20% of the total amount of taxes in dispute. It's undisputed that this is not a 42.26 case. This is a 42.26 case. This is no question in this case that 42.26 is unequal appraisal. This is not an unequal appraisal case. You start off with the proposition that the legislature intended to limit the kinds of cases that attorney's fees can be awarded, 42.25 and 42.26. And then you question then, this is not a 42.26 case. Question, is it a 42.25 case? Answer, no. In order to ascertain this, you have to look at the code as a whole. And I have presented a chart, which is part of our application, which is the last appendix to our application I have before you now. And you actually start off the chart here where the determination is made by the appraisal district. And then if the taxpayer disagrees with that determination, then the taxpayer has a right of protest. And there are 9 grounds of protest. Determination of the appraised value is number 1. Unequal appraisal is number 2. Exemptions is number 3. No, excuse me. Inclusion of the property on the appraisal roll is number 3. Exemption is number 4. Qualified for Chapter 23 appraisal is number 5. So on and so forth down to including any other action that adversely affects the owner.
So you say there are 7 grounds where an attorney's fee is not proper?
Yes, there are 7 grounds where the attorney's fees are not proper. You look at the statutory scheme, 4141, then you have a protest and a determination by the appraisal review board, an administrative determination. If the taxpayer does not agree with that determination, then he has a right of a trial de novo in court. Switching from Chapter 41 of the code, which deals with the administrative provision, Chapter 42 of the code that deals with the de novo review by the district court. You look at 42.24, and it says actions by the court. I have summarized these actions on my chart for reasons of space, but there's 3 things that the court can do. Number 1, they can affix the appraised value according to the law. Number 2, they can enter orders necessary to ensure unequal treatment. And number 3, they can enter any other order as necessary to preserve the rights of the taxpayer.
Let me explore with you then maybe something of the converse of the question Judge Hightower posed. If on 7 out of 9 the answer is no, and if instead of strictly construing this statute we stretch it a little bit to try to cover this situation, then will there really be any basis for denying attorney's fees on all the other of the seven that you mentioned?
The,
or did we, if we afford the taxpayer the relief that they want here, won't we have to do it in all seven of those sections?
Precisely the point. If you open the floodgate, then you got the lower Colorado River coming down. And if you open the floodgate, then you've got all kinds of things that you open up to claims for attorney's fees, and it's clear that the legislature intended not to do that. The legislature intended to define the kinds of cases that that you can recover attorney's fees in the in an appraisal case. Let's switch then to the question then that this is clearly not a 4141 protest. Flip forward quickly to 4141 of the code, 4141.1. The property owner is entitled to protest before the appraisal review board the following actions. Determination of the appraised value of the owner's property in a case or in the case of a land appraised as provided by subchapter C, D, or E of Chapter 23, determination of its appraised or market value. The code provides that all property is appraised at market value unless a special appraisal provision applies. Subchapter 23 has special appraisal provisions. One of them is ag use land. Another one is the case, in this case, would be open space land. Another one is timber land. And a final one is recreational and park land. The ag use, open space, and timber all use a productivity value. They changed the law as to the determination of value, as to how the determination is to be made. And the scenic and recreational land changes the method, but it is a market value method. That's the reason in 4121 that a Chapter C, D, or E of Chapter 23, determination of its appraised or market value, because there is a market value aspect in Subchapter E of Chapter 23. The point is, though, that the determination of appraised value in Subsection 1 deals with, has one word in there, first and foremost, and that is value. And value deals in dollar value. Now, let's turn quickly to this case. In this case, what was the protest? The protest was a Subsection 5 question as to the determination that it qualified for open space appraisal or for open space value. Determination was made no, that it did not qualify. A file after the administrative review of the appraisal review board denied the protest, and the court entered an order necessary to preserve taxpayers' rights, and that is the only thing that the six-day trial in this case covered was the use of the land. It was a question of whether it was an open space use, that is, involving agriculture. In this particular case, it was pasture land involving cattle.
If it were open space, isn't the appraisal different?
Yes, sir.
So why isn't this an appraisal case?
Because
an excessive appraisal case.
Because you have to focus on what the issue was before the court, and the issue before the court was qualification. The court was not what the open space dollar value should have been.
But whether it should have been that at all.
Right. Whether that method of determining a dollar value should have been used.
Now, but if the result is an excessive appraisal.
If the result if at that point as a result was an excessive open space appraisal, and they disagree with that dollar value, what do they do? They can protest that dollar value and say, no, that dollar value is wrong, and they can start the process over again, and they could get there. But in this case, that has not happened. In this case, The only two issues that were submitted to the jury were, does it qualify for open space, does it qualify as open space land, and what's the amount of attorney's fee? There was no dollar value evidence in the case. Now, outside the case, back at the appraisal district after the case was over, I'm not over there in the case, I'm over here at the appraisal district, they put a dollar value on that open space land because in this case we don't contest. There was no appeal of the determination that qualified. The only appeal is attorney's fee. Appraisal district put a dollar value on the open space land, and nobody protested that dollar value. That case, that matter is not before the court. What's before the court is the determination that the property is qualified for open space land, which does not yield attorney's fees under 4229.
Can you suggest a reason why the legislature would include the excessive appraisal as among those claims that attorney's fees could be awarded for, but not this kind of claim, when the effect of it is essentially the same?
This is outside the record. The vast majority of cases that go through the appraisal process are value cases. Outside the record, my law firm handles roughly 100 cases a year for the appraisal district. We have maybe 5, 6, or 7 that fall down in these categories. So the legislature intended to allow attorney's fees in cases involving dollar values. They did not intend to allow attorney's fees in cases that do not involve dollar values, but that involve some technical or scientific or some other determination of what should be involved. Look at what you've got here. You got exemptions. You've got inclusion of the property in the site. In other words, for example, if you've got a computer that was moved out of the state before January 1, it shouldn't be included. You got some other things. Determination of ownership of the property, determination of the change in use. The smaller things that are not involved.
If that were the case, that seems all the more reason to just go ahead and allow attorney's fees for those. That's not a very significant.
But the significant thing about this is Chapter 23 cases. That's my point exactly. Because you've got over 254 counties in the state of Texas. And in 200 and some, in all those counties, you've got a tremendous amount of agricultural and open space land. In Dallas County, you've got agricultural and open space land. In all counties, you have the legislature says that this, in fact, this is a question that the appraisal district determines values. These guys, that's how they spend 99% of their time. They know how to determine values, but in questions involving agriculture and all that sort of thing, that's a different question. And we're not going to subject them and subject all the citizens of the state of Texas to awards of attorney's fees in those kinds of cases.
Counsel, let me take you back for a moment. When you were standing over here representing, talking about when you back at the appraisal district, 4225 says that the court determines that the appraised value of property according to the appraisal roll. Now, this determination has already been made before it goes to the appraisal roll, hasn't it?
Glad you raised that question, Your Honor. 4225. If the court determines that the appraised value of property according to the appraisal roll.
Now, that's after this has already been determined over here.
Okay.
Before it even gets to the appraisal roll.
Right. What happens is that early in the year, the taxpayer applies for open space. And the appraisal district acts on that application and either grants or denies it. If they...
And you're saying at that point that they would not be entitled to attorney's fees?
I'm saying...
On that issue?
If they contest that determination all the way through the court, they're not entitled to attorney's fees.
But my question is, in your next step, after it's on the appraisal board.
Okay. Well, let's get over there. Let's work our way over there. Because I jumped maybe a few steps for the court, and I need to clarify that. The application is either accepted or denied. If it's denied, the only thing that goes on the appraisal roll, the only thing that went on the appraisal roll was the market value. Okay? So at the time of the protest, the only thing that was on the appraisal roll was the market value. They didn't protest the market value. They protested the denial of the qualification. After it went through the trial de novo and the administrative process, then it went on the appraisal roll, and actually the code provides that it goes on the appraisal roll as both market value and open space value because of the rollback taxes. There is a provision of the code that if you've got open space land and there's a change of use, then you have to go back and pick up the market value taxes in the preceding years. In other words, it's not the open space is not it's just a tax deferment. It doesn't erase the taxes at all. So what happened here was that there was no open space value on the appraisal roll protest at the time this case started and came through. I see that my first 15 minutes are up. I would like to reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal. Thank you.
Thank you very much, sir. I'm Forrest Smith, representing the Dallas County, the Las Colinas Corporation and Seven Investments. With respect to counsel's last statement that there was no evidence in the record with respect to what the open space value was at the time of trial, that's an error. I refer to you to the own exhibit prepared by the DCAS, Dallas County Appraisal District. It's in evidence. It states very clearly that the native pasture is valued at $70 an acre. That's in the record. That was in the trial. Junel Pohl, the exemption certificate person for the district, testified that early on in the year, that appraisal for whatever they're going to do for native pasture is made countywide. That's on the roll. So we know going into the trial, and there is testimony in there, that was clearly $70 an acre. So,
Count, did you contest that?
Did we, sir?
Did you contest?
No, we did not contest whether the $70 was correct or not. What we're contesting is whether or not there has been a reduction in appraised value. Now, that's what this issue turns on. Now, if you conclude that what we received here, when the judge in one case, in the Seven Investment case, and the jury in another case, awarded us and stated very clearly that we did qualify for 1D1 designation and 1D designation value, then what we did receive then was a reduction from the appraised market value, which was substantially greater, to a much lesser figure of the agricultural designation under 1D1. And the question is that a reduction in appraised value?
Council, 4141 gives seven instances where the opposing counsel says 4225 does not apply. Do you agree?
I think that, yes, I would agree in theory, Your Honor, because it's not necessary to simply ignore 4141. The case that we're trying here falls squarely under 4141.1, although there's a separate designation for 4115. So as I read 4141, which really is not necessary for clear reading of 4225 and 4229, then clearly Pandora's box is not going to be open. Because the only time that you will be entitled to a reduction in appraised value is when you are contesting value. So if I'm contesting, for example, whether or not an exemption, that's the next one of the things listed there. That's not a reduction in appraised value. And 4225 does not therefore cover that.
So we're clear on that then. You are in agreement with him that attorney's fees are inappropriate then as to subsections 3 through 9. You just say that your case has been mischaracterized and it should be treated as a 41.41 section.
Exactly, or 41.5, which has got to be...
Well, I guess that really leads to my next question.
All right.
If yours is... If the legislature didn't contemplate a difference between subsection 1 and subsection 5, why did they bother putting 5 in there?
Well, I think, Your Honor, I think that's because a open space designation is separate. That is a separate ground for protest. But I think for a moment, just put aside 4141. Just simply look at the two statutes that really are applicable here, 4225 and 4229. 4229 says that a prevailing party in a property tax dispute does prevail if he's the prevailing party under 4225. Then if you go back and look at 4225, it says that the things that can happen under 4225, if the court determines that the appraised value of the property according to the appraisal roll, and that was in the record, so according to the appraisal roll, the appraised value was market value, exceeds the appraised value required by law. The court found in both cases that the value required by law was the 1D1 ag use value. The property owner is entitled to a reduction of the appraised value on the appraisal roll to be appraised value determined by the court. So just for a moment, you really don't need to worry about whether 4141 does or does not cover all of those instances. If you just simply read 4225 and 4229, which are the clear, very common sense language as the May case held, as you know, the Kerr case, the only case that is held contra to granting attorney's fees in this case, both district judges did not have the benefit of the May case when they ruled one in the seven investment case and in our case, but they didn't follow Kerr case because it doesn't make any sense. Why are you here except that you're trying to have a reduction in your appraised value? Now, what is the definition of appraised value? Maybe there's some question about it. Excuse me, sir.
Before we get too far away from 4141, let me ask you this. 4141 also includes number 9, which the opposing counsel says 4225 wouldn't apply to. But number 9 says any other action that adversely affects owners. Do you think that under 4225, if there was an excessive appraisal, under some other action not listed in 4141, that 4225 would still apply?
I think what you'd have to do, I can't conjure up what that would be, Judge Hightower, but I would say that's where you would go back. I don't think you let 4141 drive this issue. You let 4225 and 4229 drive this issue. And I think when you do that, then you escape all of those issues there. You don't have to worry about Pandora's box. I noticed, for example, that I haven't been served with an enormous amount of amicus curiae from districts worrying about open up Pandora's box here. And so apparently this is not such a big deal. The truth of the matter is, as he testified, all of the main cases are with market value. And he would have you believe that the only time that you're entitled to an attorney's fees is when you reduce a market value within a market value, or, which rather strained construction of the statute, that I would reduce the productivity value from $70 an acre to something lesser than $70 an acre. Then he says that applies. That's not what the statute says, because under Section 104 of the Code, appraised value happens to be defined for counsel and for all of us. Appraised value means the value determined as Chapter 23 of this code. And if you turn to Chapter 23, then you have it all laid out for you, Judge. It's a matter of what are the various appraisal techniques. One of the appraisal techniques is market value. State it out here, appraisal. Another appraisal is land designated for agricultural use.
Well, I guess maybe it would be helpful to clarify the record on that. Now, in D-1737, your client is Las Colinas Corporation and Las Colinas Land Limited Partnership?
Yes, sir.
That's the Las Colinas Development up near the DFW?
That is correct, sir.
And what kind of agricultural production are they involved in?
They were native pasture. We had testified, testimony in the record for 40 years,
right.
Over 40 years. This land had qualified for either, had been used extensively for horse and cattle operation.
Do they have a horse and cattle operation up there?
They have both. And what was determined to qualify under the statute by the jury was a pretty extensive cow operation.
Right.
Now, the jury heard that evidence. The jury determined that, yes, in fact, you were erroneously taking, our 1D1 was erroneously taken away from us and awarded us a 1D1 valuation.
And did the record reflect whether this is land that's being held by Las Colinas for future expansion of the real estate operation?
It was in there. That was in the record.
Right.
That was in there. But as you know, Your Honor, the whole purpose of 1D1 is to eliminate forcing these kind of major expansion areas which have bloomed up in order to not have it sell to their property at some price until it works into the right phase, the right time environmentally, the right time economically. And so that was the purpose of 1D1. It's not limited to hobby farmers.
Well, may or may not be, but so that I'm clear about the record in this case, then Las Colinas sought to have its property that it held for future development but was using for a cattle operation for the time being classified not at its market value that it could be bought and sold by another willing purchaser, but wanted it classified as if it were operating it as, you know, Farmer Jones.
Well, I think that's the same thing that happened in the Seven Investment case, Your Honor, and the same thing that happens in any of these things. And your point is well taken, and let me just give you what the record does show.
I just want to find out if it's, I'm not trying to make a point, I'm just trying to find out if that's correct.
What you are saying is absolutely correct. What happened is that for years we had been granted the 1D1 designation. All of a sudden the district takes it away from us. So, of course, we say you can't do that because the same operation that we've had for 5 years, which qualified under their very rules, is now being taken away from us. So we contested that because they put the market value on us, which amounted to roughly, in one of the acreage there, approximately $87,000 an acre was the value of some of the land. That's in the record. Compare that to the $20 that we're getting out of the productivity value. So you can see that when the court ordered a reduction in the value, which he did, this court, the judge in the Las Colinas case, entered an order requiring that the district correct the rule.
What was the difference in value between treating you as a farmer and treating you as a real estate?
Well, in roughly it was in as much as $87,000 an acre versus $70 an acre.
$87,000 versus $70?
Yes.
$70,000?
Yes. But understand now, Your Honor, that $70 is universally applied to every native use acreage in the county. If you have a native use, then their manual, which I just read to you here, states very clearly that if you apply native use, in which they admitted that we were native use, that was not an issue. They have not appealed, Judge, the findings that we qualify. They've not appealed that. As a matter of fact, it's very interesting if you look at the process of this appeal and the issues here, I think it's very important to our case, and as I know my time is not too late, I'd like to move forward to a couple of things that I think are extremely important. I think it's clear, then, I would say, that without any question, there was a reduction in appraised value. And again, I would like to read to you just one piece of one sentence out of the court order. It says that the appraised values of below-described property according to 88 and 89 appraisals exceed the appraised values required by law. That's 4225. Clearly 4225. So what does he want us to do, and what does he direct the district to do? And they shall forthwith reduce the appraised value of the following property on the appraisal roll to its appraised value as qualified open space land under the native pasture category. They didn't attack that judgment. They didn't attack it in any way, and therefore it's clear that they had no reason to attack it. Now, interestingly, though, what happened is that the Court of Appeals got sidetracked and somehow began to figure out a way that $235,000 apparently was just an inequitable thing to do. And so they came up with a rather sui sponte argument, I might say, with respect to that issue, bearing in mind that the whole case of counsel here has not been tried on whether we did or did not exceed the 20% cap. That was not an issue. Didn't contest that. They didn't contest the issue of whether or not the total amount of taxes were in dispute. Didn't contest that. The only thing they ever contested was that no attorney's fees were payable, period, because of the analogy they just gave you and because of the court Kerr case, which I think is wrong and which may have, in effect, disagreed with. So with that in mind, they did not, well, what I want to say at that point is having failed to correct that, what they did on the appeal process, when they appealed to the Court of Appeals, they carried with them their objection to the issue of whether or not attorney's fees were due at all. They also carried with them their objection as to whether or not there was evidence in the record as to the amount of value of the land. I've explained to you very clearly that there's evidence in the record. The $70 I just read to you from their own witnesses is in the record with respect to the low side, and there's the $87,000 that is in the record with respect to the high side. And so the judge, in crafting his instructions, could have easily inferred what those values were and, in fact, did so do. They carried that objection with them to the Court of Appeals, not in the seven investment case. The seven investment case, they didn't carry any of those objections forward. But in the Court of Appeals, the Court of Appeals came up with a new argument, one that had not been briefed, had not been objected to in the trial court, was not raised in the brief in the appellate court, and was a complete surprise to us until we got the finding of the Court of Appeals that they had in fact interpreted it and made the statement, which I'll read. That the, here's what they say, Las Colinas had to produce evidence to show that the fees awarded by the jury did not exceed 20% of the total amount of taxes in dispute. We have searched the record. We find no evidence of the trial of the total amount of taxes in dispute. Now let me focus on that because that is a major key point. First of all, I think the law point they make is correct. Judge, you're clearly not entitled to more than 20% of the amount of taxes in dispute. So the only question is there anything in the record that would show we didn't exceed that amount, bearing in mind what the burden of proof is and what the standard of review is by this court? Now, I must say to you, the judge that tried this lawsuit didn't have any trouble with that. There was no objection at all from these parties that there was a lack of evidence on that point. And it was not raised in the brief to the Court of Appeals, but the Court of Appeals on its own brought up this new issue that we were not ready to brief, we had not understood it to be a problem. And I guess having been the witness on the stand that made the following testimony as I was attorney for this secret, I feel like sometimes I know that as I grow older I'm misunderstood, I'm misinformed, but to be totally ignored is something else. I read to you my testimony from page 717 of the record. Question. And so the total tax then would be, in controversy for 1988, would be roughly $120,000 times 5. Now that's roughly $600,000, any way you cut it. The judge could have found and did find that $600,000 was on the upside of what the taxes were in this case. By inference, he could have done that. He must have done that. Answer, that's correct. That's the reason you're asking for only 20% of that amount. That's correct. $120,000, the same thing that would be true in 89. That's correct. One other sentence here. Just clarifying the point, Mr. Smith. The statute in question, 4229, does provide that the cap of 20% of the taxes in dispute. Is that right? That is correct. And $120,000 for 88 is no greater than 20% of the taxes in dispute for 88. Is that right? That's correct. Now, to state that there is no evidence in this record with respect to the cap is outrageous. Counsel said he couldn't find the evidence in this other. I think that's outrageous. I think that is clearly supportive evidence of what the cap is. I think it's direct evidence. And under the standard of review, only evidence that is totally contrary to what I've testified could even be considered by this court. So to say that this is not more than a scintilla, I think strains credulity, and I don't think the court will buy that. There are some arguments in this case about the fact that you can't use the approximation because I said roughly, whatever it might be, roughly. You can't do that. You've got to have the exact penny. But I want to point out to counsel that in the Seven Investment case, in which I'm reading from the stipulation of fact between the parties. So we're dealing with the same issue, Your Honor. We're not dealing with a different party. We're dealing with DCAP, the Dallas County Appraisal District. It says, the total amount of taxes in dispute for the year 66 is approximately $91,000. So in their brief to you, they argue that there's no precise evidence of what the taxes in dispute are. Well, their own record here makes it very clear that you don't have to have the precise amount. And, of course, common sense would also dictate that that's not necessary. I think the in the whole context of this thing, I think you need to go back and look at what the court said in the May case. The court said in the May case that common sense tells you that if we're going down and we're going to ask for a reduction, we're going to ask for a change in appraisal techniques from the market value technique to the productivity value technique, that we're asking for a reduction in value. It's hardly thinkable that we would ask the court to increase the value, and we did not do so. As a matter of fact, Chapter 23 provides, Judge, that you cannot ever have a productivity value greater than the market value. It cannot, by statute, be greater. And, of course, what happened in both the Seven Investment case and in the and in the Las Colinas case, the judge heard the evidence. He had no trouble coming up with a definition to the jury. That evidence was not objected to. My evidence that I just testified to you, I was subject to cross-examination by Mr. Taylor. He didn't ask for an exclusion of that testimony. He didn't object to that testimony. He didn't do so to the trial court. He didn't do so to the Court of Appeals. Now, any way you cut it, that's waiving, and maybe the reason it didn't object to it is because it's so obviously clear as to what I was saying. At least I thought it was. The May court stated that with all deference to the Kerr court, it was just illogical. And applying a very clear common sense approach, May said that when one goes in on one of these cases, what he's after is a reduction in appraised value. And if the court finds that there was a reduction in appraised value, which they did, then attorney's fees are applicable, and he so found that. I still have a few minutes, is that okay?
Time's up, counsel.
Time's up. Thank you very much. The rest of the articles we have with respect to the Track 2 controversy are briefed, and I would appreciate consideration of those, too. Thank you very much.
Mr. Smith, terrible shame on you, Mr. Smith. You did terrible violence to the record in this case. The record clearly shows in this case that I objected to Mr. Smith's testimony as to attorney's fees. The record shows in this case that I made a motion for directed verdict on attorney's fees. The record shows in this case that I made a motion for judgment NOV on attorney's fees. Mr. Smith, shame on you. You did terrible violence to the record in this case, and I can't stand here and not point it out to this court.
Counsel, just address your remarks to the court.
Yes, sir. First of all, this is not a 4225 case, so we don't really get into all this. I don't want to...
Let me ask you, counsel, apart from, if there were no 4141, if we were just looking at 4225, why doesn't that statute apply to this case?
For one... you're gonna skip my first argument, but I'm not agreeing to skip.
Right.
So let's just talk about you.
But leaving it out for the moment.
Leaving it out, one reason. Because it says the appraised value determined by the court. Now, in this case, there was absolutely no appraised value, dollar value, determined by the court. That's exactly why the May case is, the May case is wrong. But that's exactly why the May case must be distinguished, because in your appendix to my petition, the judgment in the May case is in that appendix, and it shows that by stipulation of counsel, in that case, the open space land value was determined by the court. None of that happened in this case. This is not a 42.5 case, Judge. But if you wanted to accept their argument, if you want to either wipe out 4141 or accept their argument that they can do violence to the statutory scheme and go from qualified open space and skip this and just jump it right up here. And thereby just make all of this, the rest of this, irrelevant. Eliminate the rest of this in Chapter 41. Also eliminate in Chapter 42 the action by the court. Eliminate this one too. Just make them totally unnecessary. If you're going to do that, then you've got to have evidence of a competing values. And you've got to have some evidence of competing values. Now, Mr. Smith said that I offer to you to look at the Brazos County case cited in my brief. That is a case wherein it gives a blueprint as to how you prove up your amount of taxes and controversy. You can't get to the amount of taxes and controversy without dealing with the value in controversy, the difference in value. So look at, as an example, the Brazos County case. In that case, they proved up that there was competing values of $2,250,000. They put that in evidence. They had expert witnesses to come in and put those values in evidence. In our case, their expert witness came in, and I asked him, have you been asked to give a market value in this case? No, I haven't. Have you been asked to give an open space value in this case? No, I haven't. Okay, so you don't have the competing values from which you can calculate the difference in value on which you can apply the tax rate on which you can calculate the amount of taxes in dispute. The evidence that Mr. Smith refers to in his argument is no more than a mere scintilla. It's backing in and bootstrapping in to make an argument. But you don't ever even get to that question in this case, because this is not a 41-41-5 case. This is a 41-41-1 case. Is and always has been. I don't want to give any credence to his argument by replying to it, but if you don't ever get to that argument, but if you can get to that argument, it doesn't wash. Let me just show you how you open the floodgate. You say, okay, this property shouldn't be included on the appraisal roll, so it's a zero value. Bingo. This is an exemption. It doesn't have, so it's a zero value. Bingo. I'm telling you, the legislature did not intend for people to bingo in cases other than excessive value and unequal appraisal cases. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Counsel. This concludes the work of the court for this morning. The three cases are submitted under oral arguments and the briefs. Marshal, return to court.